and welcome to The Extra Edge, a sports analytics podcast powered by Connexon. I'm Dave Grinjinski, and today we're talking to Dr. Sasha Hertel and Dr. Ludwig Roof. Dr. Hertel is the head of performance diagnostics and science coordination for TSG 1899 Hoffenheim, the German professional football team that plays in the Bundesliga, while Dr. Roof is a sports scientist, strength and conditioning coach, and a researcher for the team. Actually, they're both researchers. And thank you both, first of all, for joining us.
Thanks for having us here, Dave.
So let's start with this. In addition to the professional teams, both of you are helping to develop male and female athletes who are in the Hoffenheim Academy. So Dr. Hertel, let's start with you because you're wearing so many hats. Can you break down your responsibilities with the team, the academy, or both?
Yeah, I try to. So perhaps start with this. I've been working at TSG Hoffenheim since 2016. And before I came here, I was a lecturer for sports science at the University of Karlsruhe, now called KIT. And I was the head of performance diagnostics department there. And in this role, I advised many athletes and clubs, and we did a lot of research in this context. And when I joined TSG 8 years ago now, my initial job was to set up an in-house performance diagnostics department. And now I'm responsible for all the S&C coaches for the area of data management. And I guess the most exciting thing for me and the most helpful thing for me is that I'm responsible for all teams, academy and the professional teams, male and female. And that's why I was able since 8 years to implement a lot of ideas to have the great picture and not only dealing with one team, what makes things a lot more difficult.
And I know, Dr. Roof, you've done a lot of work with the academy from U16 on up, but also you got a lot of studies out there, anything from sprint speed to sprint training load, you name it. Can you talk a little bit about your responsibilities?
Yeah, I flip it around. Just start with my current role, actually. So at the moment, I'm with the Under-90 as a S&C coach and a sports scientist. In addition to this, I'm researcher in the TSG Research Bed, which is a daughter company of the club. So I'm a part-time role there and a part-time role here. And my background is pretty much has been always been both. So being a practitioner on the field with the youth teams, male youth teams, and on the other side, being a researcher and doing research on various things like, as you said, like sprint stuff or training load or biological maturity. Those were the main areas, or are the main areas still to this time where I'm interested in doing research.
Well, I got to be completely honest, because one of the things that I thought when I was doing my research for this podcast that I thought was awesome is the town you were born in translates in English to moist cheeks. And it says when the Hoffenheim website translates it, it translates it to moist cheeks. And I just the term cheeks to me is endearing only because my son was that we called him when he was little the cheeky monkey, and then now honestly his nickname is transformed into cheeks. Did you know that it translates into moist cheeks, the name of your town? And can you say it in German for me?
Yeah, I wasn't aware of it, actually. I've never translated it to English, obviously, because I was always saying it in German. And yeah, and in German, it's called Feuchtwangen. Funny coincidence.
So yeah, I thought that was great. So I might have to change my son's nickname to Moist Cheeks now. So he won't like it, but I will. So, but now let's get down to business, guys. So on this podcast, we talk about how coaches collect sports data and analytics and then use it to get insights and then obviously use those insights to take action and train, you know, change your training or whatever it is, whether it's outside of the games, in game, whatever. And I know Hoffenheim, you guys are considered a pioneer when it comes to this kind of stuff. Analytics, development of players, you know, you're always looking for new and innovative methods. So let's start with you, Dr. Hertel. My first question for you essentially is, how did you start using sports data? When did you discover it? And when did you feel like it would make a difference?
Yeah, I guess it's part of my history, to be honest, because as I mentioned in my former life, I was head of a department of performance diagnostics. And what is performance diagnostics? It's collecting data in a very systematic way. So the collecting data and dealing with data and taking the information out of the data is part of my history. And when I came here to TSG Hoffenheim, I guess I found a club where collecting data was kind of within the DNA of the club, because I guess you're aware of the fact that we have close links with a software company, SAP, and the founder, one of the founders of SAP, Dietmar Hopp, is very much linked to data collection and dealing with data. So on many levels, from the very beginning, we started with data collections. And I think as we are not a classic traditional club, and it is part of our brand core that we focus on technology, data, and innovation, I found a lot of things when I arrived here in 2016. But it was a pleasure for me to get this, to be involved in this playground of data collection and boost it somehow and implement a lot of things.
And Dr. Roof, how about you? How did you, did you find sports data, or did it find you?
I guess it found me somehow during my undergrad years already, because I was at that time already interested in statistics and data analysis. And so it just evolved over time and progressed towards conducting on starting a PhD. And it was just embedded in my daily routine already, I guess, there. It just on a daily basis, you try to collect data and collect it on a scientific and proper way, essentially. And to do then any kind of research, either it's proper research, like doing it for a study, or just collecting and analyzing data for your own coaching staff and so on, and reporting it back to players or to the physio and so on. So it's always both sides, and it's been always part of day one, essentially, when I started being on the pitch or in the gym.
So Sasha, you know, you've been at this a little while now. What advantages have you seen, you know, since you've been collecting data? What do you think are the biggest advantages?
Yeah, this question is very often asked, but it's very difficult to answer, because we are responsible for soccer teams, and the soccer game is a very complex game. So it's very hard to answer questions like, could you achieve any certain results by dealing with data? For example, if you talk about player availability, this is such a complex thing. For example, you have players that are very robust, or they are not robust from the DNA aspect, or you have contact injuries, you cannot make sure you can get rid of them. Or you have, for example, you have players with small children, and so the number of infections could possibly increase. So we have a lot of things to deal with, and it's very hard to make this aspect causal. But of course, I'm the first to say that data helps you to find better decisions.
And Ludwig, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, from my side, I think from a tactical perspective, every person, every coach, every player has its own biases, its own thoughts and its beliefs, essentially. And collecting data, analyzing data, reporting data, showing data often not changes their opinions, but it contextualizes and objectifies essentially what's potentially helpful or not helpful. Sometimes you can't measure what you want to measure, of course, but most often it's sometimes possible to get a small thing, a small clue out of data, and to open eyes for coaches or players. And I guess from my perspective as a coach, as a sports scientist and strength and conditioning coach, objectifying things in various stages of rehab, in planning, training, reporting back data and so on, that's really helpful for just confirming or not confirming your own opinion and beliefs and thoughts, essentially.
I'll throw this question out to both of you. Is there one area of the game where you think data collection helps more, whether it's injury prevention or whether it's sprint speed or specific metric? Is there any area that maybe stands out, or is it all just good? It's all good information to have.
Yeah, perhaps Ludwig, I can start. Perhaps it's important to mention at this point that why we collect data, or it's worth mentioning that we collect data for two different reasons. Firstly, of course, we try to optimize the performance of the players, of the individual players, and of course of the teams. but also we try to answer long-term research questions. And that why it's for me, it's very important to collect the data in a great picture with great ideas and not for one single aspect. I guess this is worth mentioning to understand the TSG Hoffenheim approach.
Yeah, and from my side, I guess it has barriers and so substantial impact on various aspects of player development. And in this regard, it's obviously robustness, injury prevention, but also performance. And those are big buzzwords, obviously. But from my perspective, of course, rehab process is an important one. We just collect data routinely and see players progressing from one stage to another, for example, objectifying outcome criteria and so on. But also on a day-to-day basis with the team, when it comes to in the gym, for example, certain lifts can be measured through velocity and then objectifying just the targets. What do you want to target? And that's essentially performance targets in the gym of making somebody more explosive or whatever. On the pitch outside, again, it has to say something about how much load can we do, how fast has somebody been on the sprint and so on. So it is a plethora, I guess, and it has many, many different areas. And outside of this, we probably, as you mentioned as well, is in terms of scouting and player identification processes and so on, where it also has a huge role, I guess, overall. So from our club, I guess, it's can be said that and certain many different departments and areas have to deal with data, and it has a huge role, I guess, in every single department.
Well, I love to ask this question because the answer is always completely different with every guest who's on the podcast. And Sasha, we'll start with you. I always like to ask our guests what their top three metrics are. Like, we call it the metrics trifecta. And if, you know, because there are so many out there. And obviously, part of the reason I ask this question is to help coaches and trainers and, you know, who might be, you know, looking at hundreds of metrics and thinking, man, there's no way I can keep up with all this. But to break it down to three, maybe your top three. Sasha, let's start with you. What would you say your top three metrics are that you just can't live without, you have to have on your players?
Do you really expect me to give you this?
Hey, I didn't say this podcast was going to be easy, you know? we've already mentioned moist cheeks, so we got to go here now.
So I don't want to disappoint you. Yeah, it really is related with the answer we had before. So it's all about context. So it depends on the area we are talking about. Are we talking on talent development? Are we talking about injury prevention? Are we talking about getting the players in the perfect shape? So it's always context driven, and yeah, it depends on the area we are talking about. And perhaps again on the larger picture, for me, for example, tracking data is very important to deal with if you don't have performance diagnostics data. And so if you talk about performance diagnostics, speed is very important for me, but we at TSG, we are very, very aware that psychological or cognitive data is very important as well. And of course, soccer skills. So it must be a combination. And as I'm employee of TSG Hoffenheim, I am not allowed to tell you three concrete KPIs.
And that is absolutely fine. So let's see what we can get out of Ludwig. What can you tell me?
I'm just trying to pick three areas, and I'll just give you three from my areas because I had a little bit more time to think about. So obviously, because of my background, biological maturity is a big one. And I think working in the youth setting, measuring and assessing or estimating biological maturity is a big one in terms of seeing how far players are developed. And this gives always a good impression of where a player stands in their development. Speaking about one of the KPIs in terms of my area, in terms of strength and conditioning and so on, is player availability. So any kind of things of injury statistics, I guess, is a really good one where it's important. And I probably would go with, because it's my daily business as well, any kind of good measures or metrics in terms of acute responses to load. So did we do appropriately, essentially, though, if you do the tracking, Sasha mentioned the tracking data, I go with the response to the data, to the load. So seeing how players respond to load and how the plane has to adjust it appropriately, or it has to follow right away again, or These are not top three, but just three ones that I just popped in my head right away, which are important in general.
Well, one of the things that fascinates me, what I think sets you two apart from some of the other guests that we've had on the podcast, is the maturity studies that you have done. Because I even here in the States, you know, we are starting, our athletes are starting at such a young age, and now they're really starting to shift kids to be more sports specific at a younger age. Back in my day, here we go, let me do that speech. I mean, I played American football, I played basketball, I played baseball. We had a different sport, you know, every 3-4 months, you know, we were playing something else and we were focused on that sport. It's a little different now. Like I didn't go year round. I played baseball in college. That's when I experienced year round. I was dedicated to baseball and, you know, we were involved somehow, some way, you know, preparing for baseball all year round. Now you see it all the time in all the sports, and the maturity studies that you guys are doing, I think, is phenomenal to be able to track where these athletes are from a very young age. And I wanted to make sure, you know, since you brought it up, I want to ask you about that and just what, you know, I mean, you're probably in the early stages, but what are you learning from your studies and the data? And if it's too early to tell yet, that's fine if that's the answer. But what are you able to tell? Or is there anything that stands out as you're tracking athletes from these very young ages all the way up through the professional ranks? Go ahead, Lewid. Yeah, go ahead. We'll start with you.
Okay, yeah, I guess it's a cool area which has been around for decades already. And I guess it just started the last decade-ish. To get into professional soccer academies, and it spreads out to various other sports now as well. I guess we in Hoffenheim, we're not that greatly or hugely different to other academies where as puberty comes in, hits in, early maturing players are favored essentially because obviously because of their physical advantage and so on. And I guess implementing and sensibly making this topic more of a priority for coaches, it opened our eyes, but also essentially the eyes of the coaches of what actually this topic is. So what kind of implication it has to favor early maturing guys, how this impacts potentially results on the pitch, and what is actually important in a youth academy setting. Is it important to bring in early maturing players more so than on time or late maturing players? Is it important to get the best team on the pitch on the weekend? Is it important to win essentially in the league in the under 13, 14 age group, 15 age group? Or what are the important bits in terms of developing a player from age group to age group, like bringing or keeping the player in the system, giving him appropriate training context, training time against similar opponents or teammates of similar maturity status, bringing it up to under 16, 17, where it actually matters then and where things just even out, essentially because he grows, the player grows and so on and matures. And that's the most important bit, I guess, in terms of grading strategies or making a coach is really aware of educating them of what it means that you have such a huge diversity in a team of 14, 15. And it's not the most important bit to just to let the less maturing guys sit on the bench. Because they also need time, and we need to work around creating things and making him or making those players ready for 17, 19, 18 age groups where they can actually then really perform and transition up to the senior teams. I guess it was one of the bigger things. And of course, the research always is difficult to contextualize and to grasp and conduct studies on this. But I think we've been lucky that through the studies, essentially, those were really good gatekeepers of resulting back and feedbacking the results to the main stakeholders. And those are obviously the scouts, the guys who are responsible for which players come in, but also the coaches on such who are responsible for setting up the training session every night and on the weekend of setting up the starting 11. For example, we asked one of the studies was really cool. We asked the coaches to estimate and rate the skeletal ages as an indicator of biological maturity and see if they're good or not good in estimating the skeletal ages. And surprisingly, they were not that great, especially on the extremes of the early maturing, so really early maturing players and the late maturing players. And they thought they're way more homogeneous group of players. But feeding back the results to them and showing them after every measurement the results, it just gives them always, oh, I wouldn't expect that this player is that late actually, or that player is all pretty much mature and he's fully grown out. And we have to find solutions of how to challenge and approach properly in the gym, on the speed development, but also on the pitch. I guess it was a really cool project at that time. And since then, it just evolved of contextualizing the maturity status, physical performance data, and so on and so forth.
And Sasha, what are your thoughts on tracking super young athletes as they progress and mature?
Yeah, I guess it's important to mention that you need commitment of the club. As Ludwig mentioned, it's much easier to win the under-14s or under-15s championship if you use a lot of early maturing players. And it needs commitment of the club that you're allowed to go along with the late maturing players, because it's hard to separate who is the most talented soccer player. Is he talented or is he the most obvious talent because of his physical skills he has right now, or is he the late maturing guy or girl who is struggling with the speed at this stage the more interesting talent? So you need commitment of the club, and for us it was great to that we have been able to be early adopter of an ultrasound device to measure the skeletal age, and at this time Ludwig came up, so this was a great combination for me. The device came up and Ludwig came up with a lot of ideas and a lot of know-how, and it was great to implement this within the club and within the club DNA, because I guess it's much easier to bring up really talented soccer players if you are aware of the impact of early maturing or late maturing aspects. And well, so yeah.
Yeah, and the reason I bring this up, I mean, mentioned off the top, this is a club that has always been an innovator, and you guys are always pioneers in the sport, and not only tracking the maturity of the athletes, but also working with the women's teams, and you've recognized the fact that we may need to shift the way we think when it comes to the training of women athletes and male athletes, and you're working, and I'll be completely honest, you're working with us on this project in the TSG research lab. Can you talk a little bit now about the approach and what we're hoping to learn, what the data is telling you early? If it's too early, again, that's fine. But what are we learning so far in the difference between the training of women athletes versus male athletes, and everything that comes along with it? Go, and we'll start with you, Sasha.
Yeah, I guess it helps. For the example that we had right now, the biological maturity, for example, it's very helpful if you got not only an idea, if you have concrete data about the stage of development, and we know that it's different in boys and in girls, but measuring it and having this information for every player, male and female, makes a big impact, and makes it much easier to set up meaningful training sessions, for example. And I guess we are also going to talk about the menstruation cycle study we do with the female team. There's a lack of science, of research in this area, and as TSG, we have the possibilities, we have the background, we have the commitment of the club that we can do research within this topic that helps us understanding the difference between male and female better and improving the training process, the talent development process better.
Dr. Roof?
Yeah, so I think the female side, obviously, as a caveat, I was always working in the male side, so I can't really say from my experience at least too much on the female soccer side. So, but from a scientific perspective and from a general thoughts perspective, it's like, as Sasha said, it's a huge huge area at the moment. Everybody tries to get something done in this area, but from the data perspective, I guess we're not so far yet. And so the first point for us was to understand actually if the measure cycles are regular or not regular in this population, and what kind of measures are appropriate to track it appropriately and correctly, essentially, if it can be done essentially just by reporting symptoms, or if there has to be done any semi-invasive equipment that's needed to measure it appropriately. And then in the next stage is actually, it would have been an impact on what kind of impact the different phases have on different aspects of performance, essentially, and injury, of course. But injury data is always difficult to measure, but to collect over time. So many data points and many years to collect injury data. But as I said, essentially, we want to understand just the methods, to have appropriate methods to measure these things, and then to move on and to see what kind of influence it has in different stages on physical performance, how it can be impacted by, or how the stages can or impact the acute responses to strength training, for example. And I guess we're not there yet overall. So this scientific guidelines are not there yet, and we have to develop it first, but it has an impact. It has a huge impact, I guess, if we do appropriate and good studies, and has a huge impact on the female side, because really it's needed there as well, because they deserve to have the same conditions as we have, essentially. And that's why it's really cool that we're doing this, and also again, together with you guys.
Well, and to continue with you, Dr. Roof, what I think is interesting, you know, and we'll get Sasha's thoughts on this after you answer, but this is kind of old school meeting new school, because you use the data, the performance data that comes from tracking the players, you know, with the sensors and, you know, and all the technology. But when it comes to the studies on female athletes, it comes down to, here's a daily questionnaire. Where are you at on your cycle? You know, I mean, it's come down to a piece of paper and then a little demand planner you put together, you know, just to track it kind of day by day. And I think it's probably how we got here, right? With sports analytics, you know, you're back probably tracking things on paper, and, you know, and so you have to start somewhere. And I mean, in a lot of respects, is that where we're at? We just have to start somewhere.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, back then, 10 years ago, when actually starting was also starting with a paper pen, draft session, or waiting off the deep regression after training sessions. And now when he's done, or getting more automated and so on. So I guess, yeah, we have to start somewhere. And I guess the entire impact is huge now. And so it's good that we're starting at least. Yeah.
And Sasha, your thoughts?
Yeah, you worded it very correctly, because you need to start somewhere, and it's no secret if I tell you we are still struggling which KPIs of your tracking device are the most important. Do we understand it? Which one we got an idea which correlate, which show you some mechanical load, which show you some metabolic load, and so on. But we are still seeking for a lot of answers, and Ludwig and I and some colleagues we discussed as a presentation of an English or Scottish colleague we heard some months ago. He said he doesn't collect any tracking data anymore because he doesn't understand it. This could also be a solution, but I guess you need to start somewhere, and you need to collect and get some experience. The devices get better, the information get better, and you need to try to create the larger picture and collect meaningful data and try to answer the questions. But it's a long way to go. But as you mentioned, you need to start somewhere.
Yeah, I mean, we didn't have cell phones 10, 15 years ago, and now we all have them, and we all know how to work. You know what I mean? It's just like anything else. There's always those growing pains. You know, let's talk about some of the actions you have taken. And you don't have to name names. You don't have to give away any secrets. Sasha, we already know you're not giving away secrets. But I'm just curious, you know, over the years or the time you've been using the technology or collecting data in itself, you know, do you look back on those aha moments and things that have changed the way maybe you approach training, or you approach how you prepare for a game, how you prepare players individually, how you prepare a team? Do you have any specific actions that you have taken over the years that have changed because of the data and the analytics that you've collected? And Sasha, we'll start with you.
Yeah, the next good but difficult question to answer, to be honest. So I guess, again, there's no precise answer. The fact that we have built up a wonderful data set over the last few years and analyzing our own data has helped me a lot. I want to mention again the expression large picture. So I guess we are able to understand the possibilities and also, of course, the limitations of data and data collection. And I therefore have the feeling that I can better evaluate major announcements from many companies. There are a lot of companies who tell you they can do anything. They can reduce your injuries. They can tell you what's the next Messi and so on. And I guess for me, it's very helpful to be able to deal with a known and good data set and be able to separate between what is possible and what is not possible, to be honest. So it's an answer on the greater picture, I guess. And I guess if you want to have a more precise answer on this, the more anecdotal and very simple example is there are still enough soccer coaches who tell us, I can tell whether a player is fast or slow, the typical thing. And if you measure the squad, there are always at least two or three players that are very surprising at both ends of the velocity. So this, like every year, it's another good example for me. Very easy, but easy to understand.
Ludwig?
Yeah, I guess I'm younger than Sasha, so I don't have that.
Thanks, Ludwig.
Much experience overall.
Yeah, he was going to let that go by. Sorry.
This is an audio podcast, Ludwig.
Hey, I'm with you, Sasha. Don't worry. I got you.
No one would have known.
You're going to be doing sprints, Ludwig, to keep it up. You're going to be doing some sprints after this podcast is over.
No, I would say that from our philosophy, I guess, overall, and that's what Sasha implemented over the years, I guess, and that's why I came in, is that it's probably better to have a proper and appropriate routine database and data collection process that slightly evolved over time, but maintain the same and has rigor and standardized and allow scientific questions to be answered, essentially, and not just to flip in and bring in new data and new technologies. And you have to always evaluate them. And that takes time, obviously. That's why research head on. Yes, we have a lot of questions or inquiries from technology companies that come to us and want to get a demo and so on, and you can try it out and so on. And that takes a huge time. And it's not to destroy them and say it's not useful or whatsoever, but it's always context dependent as such. And of course, it's important to have I don't like the 80-20 rule or whatsoever, but you have an established data collection process that's appropriate and has good measurement properties in terms of validity and reliability and responsiveness that you're just aware of it. And then on top, you always try to find something new and experiment and so on. And something, sometimes you bring something in new, and obviously you just move something out. That's a normal process. But it should be a good solid foundation, and on top of you can experiment. And just given a few examples, and when I started out, I think 10 years ago-ish, FOSS platforms just evolved, and there were still more or less the old, big, huge, expensive ones out there. And over time, it just got more available, more portable, and more also pricey available as such. And now we have one. We have a FOSS plate, and I do really like it because, again, it objectifies the process and can be measured on many things, not everything. You can also, I always make assumptions of what you measure and how you measure it and so on, but it just gives a lot of room to experiment and good quality of data because they're valid and they're reliable and they're responsive and so on. And I guess it can, and it's a similar thing with tracking data overall. So 10, 15 years ago, there was little and the market was really small. It just expanded and now it's huge, but now more or less it's really established that it's really useful and everybody found its use as such. It's not hyped that crazy anymore that you can predict injuries based on in tracking data, but it has found its role as such. And now it's established and the role is really good and the value is really good of planning training sessions, reporting back training sessions, what has been done and so on, but it can't do much more as such overall. And it is really good. And it's similar with many other technologies as such, but I do prefer having good quality of data, an established process of how things have been done, how things have been standardized and so on. Then on top, we can still experiment. And that's has been similar with maturity. Last example, maybe. And obviously in the past, the equation-based somatic maturity indicators have been the most important ones as such. And now, 10 years later, many studies have been done that they are a bit of flawed and it's not really that valid as such, and we have to find better solutions. And 4 or 5 years ago, we had this opportunity with a new company. It came in. We also took a lot of time to do the hard stuff, the validity stuff and so on. But now we have more confidence in it. It's an established role and established part inside of our testing battery as such. But on the flip side, when it comes to growth and maturity, the best thing actually is also still to measure standing height and body mass on a really, really good quality basis. And it really gives you a good level of data and good sense of information of a player in terms of growth rate and so on and so forth. So if you have nothing, there's just a really simple thing. It's really, really good. And you can get way more insights of doing just something not really that well. And I guess that's the bottom line too. Just a really simple thing. It's really, really good in terms of just getting new technology and bringing it new in, trying it new out, just moving it out again. It's too much noise overall and too little information can be conveyed and interpreted and brought it back to what it actually matters in terms of player identification, player development, player selection.
So, Sasha, back to you real quick on this. One of the answers, the answer I get a lot from, especially the American coaches, is, you know, they like to use the data and the analytics because, you know, the insights they get from them. The action they typically take is the general sense is we need to make our practices or our training more like our games, because that's the big displacement that a lot of coaches find. We're not practicing hard enough and we get into the game and now we're running ourselves, you know, into the ground by the time we get to the end of the game. Sasha, do you feel like just on a superficial level, like is that an action most coaches can take away from collecting data and analytics, a way to make their practices more like games?
Yeah, I guess if we knew how the perfect training session would look like, it would be great. So this is one approach, creating the training sessions, especially like the matches look like. This is one approach, but it helps. I want to mention the expression data-driven decisions. For example, sometimes you have training sessions you can't even estimate how high the load has been, and having numbers for that is very helpful. And one concrete example for me is we know that we should have a maximum sprint speed at least 90 or 95% of the during the training session. You should reach 95% of the maximum sprint speed of the player. And so you can use tracking data to measure, for example, this. Getting numbers, getting data, being more aware of the work, getting experience, collecting experience, you know, which training sessions work. And I always come to the summary, it's very individual. So collecting experience with the data, getting more insights, which training session is exhausting, demanding, and which is not, which you have training sessions that look only demanding, but they aren't. So it's about the great picture and, yeah, getting an understanding of what metrics you have in the game, in the match, and what metrics you have in the training. It helps a lot. But we still don't know what is the best kind of practice we need.
Yeah, no, that's great insight. I appreciate that. Ludwig, what about you? Is that a superficial way to kind of look at collecting data, just to try the intensity of your practices, trying to get that to match your games?
Yeah, that's probably the biggest challenge overall, to measure those things that matter and conveying it back to how it should be sort of replicated. I do think that was one big missing point. That's essentially the philosophy and the physiology of how players adapt and so on. And I do think that it's the biggest challenge in terms of making those things measurable that matters the most. So I could easily replicate a drill to sort of replicate the demands of the game, but potentially the things that are, so players still report it feels different essentially because it's 5 minute block, for example. And so sometimes the things that you want to measure can't be measured through whatever tracking devices you use, to make this measurable that you want to see. And to give a simple example, of course, everybody measures some sort of acceleration or deceleration. If you know that on a 5 minute block during a game, you have X amounts of decelerations and you just make a drill out of it and replicate exactly those things, those 5 minute block, in terms of number of acceleration, decelerations, obviously it's fairly simple, but it's only a 5 minute block. You forget about the physiological aspect of what happens during this time, and you can't extend it in a 90 minute, or you can't extrapolate it on 90 minutes perspective. So I think it's way more important to look at a bigger picture of seeing how does a match essentially look like, of course, in an individual level. And don't try to replicate exactly the same numbers in the training pitch, but make a plan out of the experience and feedback of the players of seeing that has been the plan for a hard training session, for example, spread out on a 80, 90 minute time period. What was the response following those things, and how does it impact the physiological aspects of the player? And then move on, because essentially you want to increase the capacity on a physiological basis to increase and essentially the demands on the game. The players can extend whatever it means, intensity on the pitch. I guess everybody speaks about volume and intensity, but those things are the most difficult things to quantify, to make a number of it. Because make one number on intensity, because it's a sum of so many different aspects, and you can't essentially give a number to a 1 minute acceleration, a 1 meter acceleration, a 1 meter deceleration. It doesn't really can't be that accurately measured with the current technological devices. You can see what the kind of physiological aspect and physiological demands that was related to the game or not. So I think zooming a bit out and seeing just a bigger picture of what was the plan for a given day, what kind of numbers we should hit, potentially in relation to the game, yes, but not potentially in relation to a 5 or 10 minute block that was the most demanding block during a game, and seeing how players cope with it, seeing how players respond to it on a daily basis, and then zooming again out, seeing how players evolve over time in terms of the physiological capacities, in terms of endurance, strength, explosive strength, and so on. And just in case those things increase, radically they should translate to higher intensity, and whatever it means again, on a training day, and then these should translate them to on game day on the weekend as well. So I think I'd like to see it way more from this perspective, from this angle, instead of what has been the most intense 1 minute block during a game. Let's try to replicate, because from the data, from research and literature, if you translate it, like you have a 150, 160, 70 meter per minute. And if you think about how fast somebody moves and travels during 1 minute, 150 meters, it's pretty much nothing. It's a speed that's pretty much nothing. And everybody could easily jog this or run this. And so, yeah, trying out, bringing way more the physiological aspect into it, I guess it's way more important.
See, now those last two answers are the reason we do this. That is exactly, you know, like the education I think coaches and trainers and everybody out there needs to hear. That was phenomenal from the both of you. Now, last question before I cut you two loose, and we'll start with Sasha, you know, because I can't wait to hear your answer on this. What is still missing? I mean, you know, we have all this great technology. We're collecting all these great metrics. We're learning all these new things about athletes and in all of these sports. What, in your opinion, at this point, are we still missing?
You mean from a tracking point of view or in general?
In general, or if there's a specific, you know, if it does come down to tracking, whatever, you know, whatever you think it is that you say every day, like, boy, I wish we had that. This is great, but boy, I wish we had that.
Yeah. The last question is the most heavy one. I guess we are on a good pathway, and the data approach has improved a lot in the last years. And I guess if you have a look at sports that are not that complex like the team sports or ball sports. I guess the development of data, it will answer a lot of questions. But to be honest, I like the idea that soccer is such a complex, for example, soccer is such a complex game that there are a lot of questions will still be open in the next years. And I like always like the expression, I guess it's from a former TSG coach, I like that we are on a good way to minimize coincidence in soccer. And I guess data and technology won't answer any question. And I think that's a good thing, because otherwise, I guess it would become boring.
Well, and
so what is missing from a technical point of view? I don't know. The typical answer is the data collection should get easier, more automated, more accurate. This is a typical answer, but I don't have this great picture idea what needs to be improved, to be honest. We are on a good way.
I appreciate the honesty. That's great. Ludwig, what do you think?
That's a good question. Again, it's a broad question as well, and I try to narrow it down to maybe one or two specific ones that I'd like to see, essentially. I do think, based on the research that I've been doing on doing my PhD as well, I do think a trend has been evolved in terms of making it things more invisible or conducting things just without the player knowing that things have been conducted, and making inferences on the fatigue status, for example, for player or on the performance data. And I do think from a research head on again on my side, it would be helpful to move in a different direction of getting more lab technology essentially on the field, but still doing data collection that is available to everybody, and making data measurable the way it should be done in a lab essentially. So for example, force plates, again, a big and good one. You could assess stride mechanics during running, for example, but data are way more noisier if you do it that way on the pitch with so many contextual factors, and just going more the efficacy side of doing things more scientific, more rigorous, more objective, I guess would be really good. But bringing the lab technology, the lab things, for example, high-speed cameras and so on, bring it more on the field of making it more accessible, more actionable, making it more readily available for coaches and using this information. So for example, again, sprint mechanics would be really cool, but at that time so far, we need high-speed cameras set up, and they're synchronized, and it's really cumbersome and impossible for us to use. Can use iPhones and AI and so on. Is a bit, again, with my research head on, it's a bit more black box, and you don't know what's happening there actually. So I'd like to see more of the visible monitoring approach again of routinely collecting data appropriately to scientific standards as such, I guess. This would be really cool. And I guess the other side is the optimization side, I guess, as well, in terms of collecting data, seeing data transformed and analyzed right away, and feeding it back, and not forgetting the human side in this world. And I guess with these huge technological advantages and advancements during the past few years, we feel like everybody can be measured, but and can be right away impacted and transformed, induced as an action. But I do think that the human element side is missing a bit, and I'd favor much more collecting data and the subjective feedback from players and valuing this way more, instead of making everything just purely technological and moving only, we can measure it, just fill out a questionnaire and we know it, but move a bit more towards, again, the human element.
Well, not that the product developers at Connexon Sports didn't have enough to do already. Thanks for giving them more to do, because that's cool. That's great insight. That's what we need. You guys are essentially, I mean, you're the boots on the ground, and you know, we need that conversation to keep continuing. And the other thing that I think is great that you guys have presented here today is the fact how the technology complements coaching. It doesn't replace coaching. It complements coaching, and I really appreciate the two of you taking the time to come on the Extra Edge podcast today. I really appreciate it. One thing I wanted to ask you, if somebody wanted to get a hold of you, they listen to this and maybe they want to collaborate on a study or just pick your brain about something, what's an easy way to get a hold of you? And Ludwig, we'll start with you.
It was always good being a second because I had time to think, but there's an easy one now. So I guess the easiest one to approach me or us, maybe in this case me, is through the GSK Research Lab, because we are a nonprofit organization. We are here to share and to spread our word and so on and be open and share. So just go to the website and just get a head on the research lab and see what we're doing from a research perspective. And we're happy to if everybody gets in touch with us and from a research perspective, collaboration perspective and so on. And I guess it's the easiest one to approach me there. On the personal side, again, I'm also on any social media platform like LinkedIn, Twitter, or X now, and so on. So everybody will find me there with my name, Patrick Wolf, and happy to get in touch with anybody.
And Sasha, how could somebody get a hold of you if they needed to?
Yeah, same with me. So everybody could reach out at LinkedIn, or my email can be found on our website as well. We've got a very open doors. So we also changed our philosophy during the last years, and we are open and we like collaborations. So happy.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Now, I couldn't get any secrets out of them, folks. So I don't know, you know, if you reach out to them, I don't know. You might not get any secrets out of them, but you're going to get some darn good information. Sasha, Ludwig, I can't thank you enough for joining us today and sharing your insights. This has been great.
Thanks, Dave. It was a pleasure for us.
If you know a great coach who's out there doing great things, winning games just like Sasha and Ludwig, we want to hear about them because they're using the data to get it done. We may ask them to be a future guest on the podcast. You can find us on Twitter and Instagram as well at Connexon Sports, or look for us on LinkedIn at Connexon Sports and Media. Remember, we want you to innovate the game by collecting the data, getting those insights, and turning those insights into action. We'll see you next time.